I guess I was going to ask, was there a time when design was normal with Alessi, and then it became special somehow?
Well, probably the period when that made Alessi more internationally known were the 80s, with the design operation Tea and Coffee Piazza, and with the people, with designers like Aldo Rossi, Michael Graves, Philip Stark. Well, it was a long story because then, before the 80s, I passed by the 70s, and during the 70s, I had the possibility. I was very lucky since I had the chance to work with almost all the great Italian design maestros. Each of them have left a very important mark on the Alessi, if I may say so, overall practice.
In a way, you were both reflecting Italian design, but also directing it. Can one say that you were encouraging people to make a something with you?
Yes, but this is part, you have to look at Alessi as an example of the Italian design factories. And in that, we are, the Italian design factories are a kind of, I use the words, industrial research workshop or industrial research lab into the world of design. In that, we are, our activity is actually to act as mediators between the creativity in product design and the so-called market. I prefer to say people dreams or people imaginary. This is our deep role and the characteristic of Alessi as well as my colleagues of the Italian design factories, to be an industrial research lab in design.
How did that first conversation with Ettore start?
When we started discussing, okay, he was very enthusiastic about the idea of doing design for real housewares. Okay, I consider him as a maestro. I have learned a lot of things from him. But for example, he was very critical with the over the general, generally speaking, mass production culture. So he was warning me almost every single time we met. He was warning me about not to be to be conscious of the, for example, of the cultural responsibility of my activity as an industrialist.
Would you say Alessi's true mass production, because it still seems that it's a craft-based company, that it makes things not by the million, but by the thousand?
In terms of actual production, there are very few products Alessi which are entirely handmade. Very few. Almost only the, by the way, very expensive solid silver series of tea and coffee, that tea and coffee sets that we have in our catalogs. The craftsmanship in Alessi stays in this ambiguity I was trying to explain before, because at the end, almost all what we produce is made with the help of the machines. But these machines are considered as tools which are used in a very artisanal way. I cannot be more clear. I think that we live in a kind of, I consider, lucky ambiguity, because we are at the same time an industry producing with machines, but then the spirit with whom we face every single project continues to be a very artisanal one. So we are both.
But you're based somewhat outside the mainstream of Italian manufacturing. You're in the mountains in the north. How did Alessi come to start there? Why that particular part of Italy?
By chance or by casualty, because in Romania, on the little lake Orta, 100 kilometers north from Milano, there is since 300 years this a tradition of production. Before it was only artisanal, now it is also industrial, of production of small objects for the kitchen, for the house, in wood and metal. it was just because of that that my grandfather started learning this kind of job, and then he founded Alessi.
I mean, it seems like it was the Sottsass moment, and then Sapa, who produced a very famous object. Sapa made your first kettle, is that correct?
Yes.
The bollitore. And why would Italians want to make kettles for? Because you don't boil water in kettles, do you? It's, only Anglo-Saxons do this.
That is true. It was this was a case of an idea coming directly from the designer. We almost didn't know in our Italian culture the what a water kettle is, because everybody was used to boil the water in a small pot. So when he presented the kettle, we were not really convinced, but then step by step he succeeded in convincing us. But then his idea was to design a kettle not only focusing on the aesthetical qualities. He also wanted to do a kettle which could address to several different senses. And he wanted that his kettle could produce, when the water was boiling, could produce a melody. Instead of the very bad noise of the normal kettle on the market, he wanted his kettle producing a nice melody. Not only that, he wanted a melody that could remember his childhood. He was a child in a village in Germany, and there was a river. On the river there was sometimes a steamboat passing by. And he wanted us, our kettle, reproducing this melody. To be short, after some time, my technicians were not able to find a way to produce the melody, and I was obliged to stop the project. Until 2 years later, one of the Sapper sisters, living in Germany, found out in the Black Forest an artisan producing chorists. Now, I do not know whether you know what a chorist is. I brought one with me. A chorist is a small pipe in metal with a metal, a brass tongue inside, gold-plated, which is was created in order to produce the perfect La note. And it is used, it was conceived to tune some musical instruments. Then, after some negotiations with this artisan, we convinced him to produce two special versions of the chorist in order to be put into the pipes of the weasel. I have also the weasel here. In these two pipes, we have put the chorist in Mi and Si, so two special editions only made for this purpose, in order that when the water is boiling, they can produce a melody, which is not exactly the melody Sapper wanted from the childhood, but at the end, he accepted the compromise. Compromising is also another character of Italian design factories. So Mi, and the Si, and of course together. The kettle is in production since 1982. It is a big success. So this is an example of how difficult can be working with designers.
So tell us, what was wrong with the Stark kettle?
Philippe is considering this kettle his worst ever project, and I consider it one of my... I'm very proud of it, because I think it is one of my best example of working to the borderline. One of the fiascos I learned a lot from. But here I have to tell you about, to explain to you my theory of the borderline. Theory of borderline means that a company like Alessi, or an Italian design company, has a strange destiny to live and work very close to a borderline. This borderline is dividing two areas, the world of possible and the world of not possible. The area of possible being represented by new ideas, that new products at the end, that people, final customers, will be able to understand to love, to wish, and then maybe to buy. And the era of not possible being then represented by a new project that people is not able to understand. The problem comes from the fact that this borderline is not clearly drawn, not clearly designed. You cannot see with your eyes, and surely not with the marketing research. You can only feel where it is by using some qualities which, that in my opinion, are more and more rare in use in industrial culture today. I mean sensibility, intuition, and the wish to take some risk. Knowing that risky area, the practice, good practice of normal mass production companies, what they do? They try to work as far as possible from the borderline in order not to take too many risks. And by doing that, they do not take this risk, but step by step, and they are all producing the same car or the same television set or the same fridge. I mean, the landscape of industrial product is becoming more and more homogeneous and boring. On the other side, staying or working on the borderline, yes, it is a very risky life because it is enough to move a little bit your weight and you risk to fall into the not possible area. But on the other side, if you are successful, when you are successful, I mean developing a project, a new project, staying on the right side, but very close to the borderline, then you succeed in creating a kind of a real new product. You do a real innovation. You build a little monopoly for a while. And sometimes, when you are very lucky, you succeed in moving a little bit further this borderline. In my opinion, this is the real goal that that an Italian design company or a company like Alessi should look for. The last thing is about Philippe Kettel is that when you are successful, even if you are an Italian company, you never know whether the product you are proud is really close to the borderline or maybe a little bit distant from it. The only way to know it is to have a fiasco. Only in this moment you have, when you produce a real fiasco, you have the chance to, you have a flash for a microsecond, you see the borderline where it is. It is too late for this product, of course, but very precious for your practice, your experience.
Tell me about how the first tea and coffee piazza came about. This was really...
in the 70s, I have always worked with Alessandro Mendini as a consultant, my main design consultant, apart being a designer and an architect. For us, and I asked him to organize a kind of a research in order to find new possible ways of development for Alessi and in general, more in general, for Italian design. His vision was that in that period, in the 70s, the parable of Italian design, of a bel design italiano, this very elegant a little cold Italian design characterizing the 60s and the 70s was at its end. So he had the idea to try to find something new by asking only architects, pure architects, to try out if they were interested in doing also industrial design, and international architects, not only Italians. I must say that until all 70s, Italian design was characterized by the fact of being produced in Italy by an Italian design factory, but also the fact of being designed by Italian designers. And so we invited 11 architects. We called them pure architects. I don't know whether the word was appropriate, pure architects, to design a tea and coffee set.
And ever since, Alessi has had some connection with postmodernism, one could say. It's a very strong flavor around the company still, do you
then
think?
It happened that during this period some of the most interesting architects around were later on considered being postmodernist. So the flavor, the overall flavor of this operation became postmodern, but not by wish.
So there is no one Alessi style.
We have an eclectic approach to design, and that's another characteristic of Italian design, mainly, especially today. Today, Italian design is not anymore characterized by the fact of being designed by an Italian designer or architect. But if you are looking for the best British design, you very frequently are obliged to open a catalog of an Italian design factory. The same for the, if you are looking for the best French design or Brazilian design. This has to do with this very nature of Italian design factories being mediators. Since we do believe that design is a new form of art and poetry, we consider our activity as an activity of an artistic mediator, mediating between creativity in product design terms and the market. In a sense, I can be considered as a design manager. My profession is to be a design manager, but more than this, I am probably a kind of marketing expert, so to say, in design.
Many years ago, Japan was the challenge. Now, of course, China is the manufacturing market that we all talk about. Is it possible still for a medium-sized Italian company to maintain its specialness and its identity?
We will see how it goes. But there are two different sides of two different answers. One answer is about production, local production, material production. We try to defend the production in Italy of metal. That's one story, but it has to do with our, maybe it is romantic, I don't know. Another story is if you consider what are we producing. Maybe we are not producing or only nor mainly material production. We produce ideas, we have a practice, the Italian design factories, which makes that we are able to manage the best designs wherever they are produced. So maybe in the future, the localization of the production will be less important than the creation of the ideas.
Do you and Nandini see things always the same way, or do you argue about which ones to move with and who to invite?
We never argue, but we see things in very different ways. This is why we work together in a positive.
Do you still feel optimistic about design?
Listen, it is the only job that I know.
And it gets better and better?
It is more and more difficult, yes. When I started in the 70s, the openness to design was very different. Now everybody talks about design. All companies, almost all companies, can afford to use design, even if you normally they still consider design just as a tool to help technology or to help marketing, which is a very different way from my own. So there is a lot of design around, and of course, when there is a lot of something, there is a lot of bad things also.
Do you have your own definition of what design is?
The easier is design is art and poetry. Or design is a global creative discipline that helps industry to create new products.
I think on that note, we should say thank you, Alberto, very much for a fantastic exploration of a very special company. Alberto, thank you very much.
That's it.